Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Vayera Revi'i, the fourth Aliyah in Parshas Vayera. The topic of our Aliyah is destruction and reconstruction. Our Aliyah is 40 psukim long, making it a very long Aliyah from Perek Yutes Chof Aleph to Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Dalad. A few basic ideas in our Aliyah. Let's take a look at the summary first. We hear that as this is happening, Lot has been told now he needs to escape the city, and he does so. He's trying to run away, and he goes to a place, a small city on the side called Tzoar, and as the sun is rising, there we hear about this terrible episode, this apocalyptic episode that happens, where Sodom and Gomorrah, there's sulfur, there's fire raining from heaven, and Hashem literally turns over all the cities of the valley, destroying everything, all growth in that area. And as this is happening, Lot's wife looks backwards and she turns into an Etziv Melach, a pillar of salt. Avram wakes up in the morning and he goes to the place where he prays. He goes back to the same place where he prays. And Hashem is now looking over this land, which is now smoldering, smoke is ascending, it's completely destroyed. And Lot is saved. Lot now runs from the area of Tzoar. He's terrified of being near this place, the destruction may continue. He goes into the mountains, to the caves, and we hear that his oldest daughter believes, and she turns to her, the younger daughter. It's only him and his two daughters, and they say, look, there's no one else left in the world. They've seen an apocalyptic destruction of the world. They think no one else is left. It's only me, you, and our father, and they make a decision to get their father drunk and to have children with him. So that's what happens the first evening. The older daughter makes their father drunk and has a relationship with him. The next day, the younger one does, and they have these children. They both are impregnated, and they call their children. The first one calls her Moav, because from her father, and the younger one calls hers Ammon. So Ben Ami, the son of my people. So that is the episode number one that we hear about in Aliyah. Then in the next episode, as we begin Perek Chof, we hear that Avraham now moves to the area of the coastal plain, to the area of Gerar, which is where towards the area of Gaza today. The Philistines are living there at this point in time. Avraham again says that Sarah is his wife. She is abducted to the palace of the king. And Hashem appears to Avimelech that night, the king of the Philistines, in a dream, and says, why did you take a married woman? So Avimelech then starts making excuses. Nobody told me. I didn't know. Nobody said. I was completely innocent. And Hashem says, I know you were innocent, but I don't want you to sin to me, and therefore I'm not allowing you to come close to her. And the Hashem commands him to return Sarah to Avram, and if not, he will die. Avimelech wakes up in the morning and he summons Avram and he says, why would you do this? Why would you put me in this jeopardized state? What would happen if, God forbid, only married your wife? And Avram said, look, I know that there's Ein Yiras Elokim Amokom Hazeh. What's missing in this place is fear of God. And really, technically speaking, she is the daughter of my brother, so she really is somewhat my sister as well. And this is how he leaves it. In the meantime, what happens is that Abimelech says he's welcome to stay, and he gives him money, and he allows him to stay in the Philistine land. And he gives her a grant of protection. Avram at this point in time prays for the resolution of the sickness, the plague that has affected Avimelech and his household. And because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had again stopped up the bodily functions of the household of Avimelech, and he prays for him. We next hear that Avram and Sarah have the blessing of conception. A child is created, is conceived, and Sarah becomes pregnant. And that year later, as what the angel had prophesied, giving the prophecy of Hashem, a child is born, and Avram calls him Yitzchak, as he was commanded, and gives him the circumcision, the first child to be circumcised at 8 days old, as we learned at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. So a few basic points to ponder. Going back to the destruction of Sodom, it is interesting what actually happened historically there. Just recently, there was an article based on a paper from some archaeological researchers in the Middle East, and they were puzzled by the following problem, and that is that 3,700 years ago, there's archaeological evidence of there being a disaster in the Dead Sea area. Right now, the Dead Sea area is one of the lowest areas on Earth, the lowest area below sea level. It is the area which grows very little vegetation. There's because of the mineral content, because of the salt content of the sea and the surrounding areas. It's a very arid landscape. But it used to be, there's evidence archaeologically, that it used to be a very fertile area. What happened that changed this? So the one of the arguments that is made is that there could have been the landing of a meteor, not a crater that would be created, but there are meteors which explode above the surface of the Earth, which can destroy everything in a vicinity. We're talking about 500 square kilometers could have been destroyed by this. We have similar episodes that happened over Siberia around a century ago. The amount of people estimated killed was between 40 to 65,000 people in this area, in the circle plains around the Jordan. And when such an incident occurs, the experience from a human being's perspective is a conflagration that essentially melted pottery, scorched foundation stones and several feet of ash and destruction debris turned into dark gray matrix. So that's sort of the experience. And when it's been described in the Torah, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu executing something cataclysmic. But from the human perspective, this is what it could also be. This could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu utilized some destructive force as of this, which yields this arid landscape in what used to be fertile, which is where Lot went to. Very fascinating perspective, just to see how history corroborates what we've known for so long as well. Now, why is it that the wife of Lot turns into a pillar of salt? Between all other things, there obviously, tourist sites where people claim they found the wife of Lot. That's certainly not who we don't know for sure where she really is. But why would it be that she turned into salt as well? So it is interesting that the Ibn Ezra and the Bechor Shor point out that the destruction was sulfur and everything. Gofris or Melach. Part of it was there was salt falling from the heavens. So perhaps she was ensconced because she tarried behind. She was caught up in the destruction of Sodom. That's the most basic understanding. However, Rashi says, theologically, there's also an idea here, and that is that she, according to the Medrash, was the one who went to her neighbors to borrow salt for her guests and mentioned to them that she had guests, and because she sinned through the process of salt, she was punished through salt as well. Norman Lamm has a drasha in 1974 in Parshas Vayera called Tradition and Innovation, where he understands salt to be the symbolic idea of preservation. The idea of whether a culture can be flexible and immutable, whether there is the possibility of having the same traditions and applying it to different situations, or just sticking with one model and not being able to change it. His wife looked behind her. She was not able to change and adapt and understand that the times called for perhaps a very different perspective on the life that she had been leading in her estate in Sodom. That attitude she didn't have, and she was left with the past as well. It's interesting, the Sefer Shomer Emunim says that this is also perspective and self-growth. If we stay like salt and we keep preserving what was and we're not willing to change, then we calcify and we turn into that pillar of salt. We turn into the Eshes Lot as well. Now, why is it that the daughters of Lot named their children Ammon and Moab, Moab and Ammon, which really are names which give indication to the act which brought them into the world, which is that they're from their father or their nation? So it's interesting that in the introduction to Igros Moshe Chelek Ches, Rav Moshe Feinstein's responsa, on page 15, there's a very chilling story that took place 100 years ago in the year 1921, in which Rav Moshe was in Eastern Europe, and one of the people in his neighborhood grew deathly ill and had a terrible affliction which affected their tongue. His tongue was swelling up. Nobody knew what it was. Rav Moshe went to do Bikur Cholin to visit the individual, and he asked everybody else to go out, and he explained that the other day he had asked this question. He had said, why would it be that the daughters of Lot would be so unembarrassed, so unashamed to name their children after the act that brought them into the world, that they had the children of their own father? Couldn't they be a little more tzanua and modest in naming of their children? That night, he had a dream, and in the dream, two elderly, very, very modest women came in front of him in the image and said, "We are the daughters of Lot, and we are coming here to tell you that you spoke unbecomingly of us. Because the reason why we did this was because if we had named our children anything else, we could have created our own religions. We could have claimed, like many others did over the course of history, immaculate conception, that this child came from nowhere. But we wanted to ensure that people would know exactly where the children came from in order to avoid the concern of out of the cataclysm of destruction that the Messiah is born." And the man actually, upon finishing telling the story to Rav Moshe Feinstein, turned over in bed and died. That was, and he was going to face Din v'Cheshbon, as the daughters of Lot told him. So one has to be very careful reading and appreciating these ideas. Now the question is, why is it that Avram moved to Gerar? Why right at this juncture does Avram Avinu move towards the west, towards the coastal plains, moving away from Hebron? So the Arba Barnel presents five possibilities. He quotes Chazal, who say that the stream of guests decreased because he's no longer in the center of travel. There's no people coming from the valley, the Jordan Valley anymore. He has to find a new place to host guests. Chazal has another suggestion that he quotes. This is the second suggestion that Arba Barnel brings, that he wanted to distance himself from Lot because Lot had given himself a very bad name over the incest and having children from his daughters. So he wanted to move away from him. Third possibility that Arba Barnel himself raises is concern for collateral damage. Like Lot wanted to distance himself as far as possible from that terrible cataclysm, so too Avram as well. Fourth possibility, he says, he was concerned about the downturn in the economy. There's no longer trade. There's no longer people coming. Yeah, how is anybody going to be able to make it? And finally, most profoundly, he says that Avram had just been told that he's got a new name. Remember the end of Parshas Lech Lecha? He's now called Avraham, Av Hamon Goyim. But it's hard to build a new name in an old place where he says, oh, I remember when I saw you grow up. I remember when you were... No, Avram now had to move to a new place where he could establish his Avrahamness. He could establish his new personality, and that's why he went to Gerar. This is what the Arba Barnel suggests. One last question on Ar Aliyah. Why is Avram Avinu praying for Avimelech? Why is that juxtaposed and precedes immediately the conception of his child Yitzchak? So the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Beis and Aleph tells us a very beautiful idea that there's a rule that anybody if you pray for your friend, your friend needs exactly that matter, then you are going to be answered first. A very beautiful rule. And it's learned from here. Avraham Avinu prays for the bodily functions of Avimelech and his family to work, and he and Sarah are able to conceive a child, this miraculous conception right now. Why is this? How does this work exactly? The way I understand it is the following. And so when you notice that somebody else is in need of something, and you pray for it, you care so deeply about them, you've changed yourself. You become a more deserving person for three reasons. One is become more of an empathetic person. You become more of a Rachman. And you're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Rachmanos. That's the greatest way to get it. But there are another two aspects, and that is because you are also confirming in your own perspective. You are accepting the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has two systems that work in the world. Number one is tefillah, that your words make a difference. And number two, hashkacha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and every detail makes a difference. And the fact that you were privy to the information that another person is suffering, the fact that Avraham Avinu was in this particular place at this particular time, was not by chance. By praying for Avimelech, he is ratifying both hashkacha and tefillah, and he's also expressing empathy. That makes a person deserving that those tefillahs should be answered first. With this, we close the fourth aliyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.